Good to see this number out this morning and joining with us as we let God teach us His way. The song that we just sang really is an awesome responsibility for the one who stands before you. I have the responsibility before God to be teaching what is His way. And I want you to know that I take that very seriously. And I hope that you would let me know if at any time you think I have erred in some way in teaching God's way. This morning we are going to engage in a study that I have mentioned from time to time would be frequent within the course of each year. And that is the question of divorce and remarriage. It is something that I think needs to be talked about on a regular basis, primarily for the sake of our young people as they are growing and coming to... You must have thought I was really thirsty.
I did.
I just want one.
Okay, well, I'll drink that.
I'll take the other. I asked Brett to get me a glass of water. But we are... That's going to sound strange on the recording. But we are living in an age where the whole question of marriage and divorce is a very real thing. It has happened to people within this congregation. It may happen to some within this congregation. It has affected those families that might have never thought there was going to be a problem. It's a preacher and his children. How can it happen? It's happened within my family's life, my children's lives. I've known of preachers who have had to deal with it within their own lives. I've known of elders who have had to deal with it, not just within their family, but within their own lives as well. And so it is something that I think we need to be constantly aware of. We need to recognize our responsibilities in this matter. We need to remember that Paul warned us over in Romans that we have to consider the fact that we are presenting ourselves as slaves to obedience. Paul very eloquently there in the 6th chapter of Acts made the point that we have to understand that we are going to be slaves either of righteousness to life, or we're going to be slaves of sin leading to death. And those are our choices. And the same is true in this question of marriage and divorce and remarriage. It's going to be a very simple lesson in that we're going to simply look at the reading from the text. In fact, pardon me for expanding it very far on the slide. Let's take a moment and read together here in Matthew, the 19th chapter. I'm reading from the New King James, beginning at verse 3. The Pharisees also came to him, testing him and saying to him, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for just any reason?" And he answered and said to them, "Have you not read that he who made them in the beginning made them male and female, and said, 'For this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So then they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore what God has joined together, let not man separate.' They said to him, 'Why then did Moses command to give a certificate of divorce and to put her away?' And he said to them, 'Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, permitted you to divorce your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. And I say to you that whoever divorces his wife, except for sexual immorality, and marries another, commits adultery, and whoever marries her who is divorced, commits adultery.' His disciples said to him, 'If such is the case for a man with his wife, it is better not to marry.' And he said to them, 'All cannot accept this saying, but only those to whom it has been given. For there are eunuchs who were born thus from their mother's womb. And there are eunuchs who were made eunuchs by men. And there are eunuchs who have made themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake. He who is able to accept it, let him accept it. And so as the reading goes, we are going to talk this morning about this question of divorce and remarriage. I think that we understand the difficulties that everyone faces in dealing with this question and trying to come up with that which would be appropriate in understanding what's going on in the lives of our loved ones, in the lives of those around us. But when we deal with them, when we give them counsel, it has to be counsel that is right in the eyes of God. What we're going to do is simply have the text on the screen and then look at various sections of it, and from it we're going to be addressing the lesson. We begin by noting that indeed the Pharisees ask the question, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for just any cause at all? Now, as we begin to look at this, it's interesting that we look at the setting. The setting is in the final days and months before his crucifixion. The probability is that he's somewhere in Judea, perhaps on the eastern side of Jordan, and he's in the area that was quite familiar to many of the apostles and the disciples, probably in the area where John had done much of his teaching. And so Jesus is there ministering and teaching, and a discussion arises among the Pharisees, and the occasion is quite simply that they are wanting to catch Jesus in a slip of the tongue. I think that's the reason that they pose the question to him. They want to do something that's going to turn the people away from him, because his popularity has grown and grown and grown, and they have only one of two choices. Get him to discredit himself, or get rid of him. And so this is one of their last-ditch efforts. There's going to be a few more in the last weeks of his life. But this is one of their last-ditch efforts to where they can get him to side with an unpopular view and therefore cause the people to want to turn away from him. In the background of what was going on here at this time, there were basically two large schools of thought on the whole matter of divorce and remarriage. And it was something that was as intense among the Jews as it is among us as well. So it wasn't something that was just lightly discussed and lightly thought about. The controversies actually involved those who were taking Deuteronomy, the 24th chapter, and we're not going to go back there today, but in Deuteronomy, the 24th chapter, the first four verses, you find the initial comments from the law of Moses from God with regard to the matter of marriage and the putting away. There were some who were of the opinion that indeed if you wanted to divorce your wife, you could divorce your wife simply by emphasizing an indecency about her. And therefore, because of that indecency, you were going to put her away as a result of what they would include as adultery, any indecencies that they might come up with. There was another school of thought that simply said that if that woman falls out of favor with you, that you could put her away for those reasons and those reasons alone. And the fact that she did not stand before you as the one that you thought she would be as your wife would give you the cause to consider her in a state of indecency that would be similar to the other school of thought that would put away as well. In either case, the tragedy is that all this controversy is making it obvious that the positions held and that were advocated and that would prevail among them were going to be whatever was most popular among those in Palestine, and Jesus, they were hoping, would choose the side that was the least popular and therefore put him at odds with the people. If Jesus were going to take the liberal view, then he was going to be in opposition to the conservative view. And in doing so, he was going to cause problems among the Jews that held tightly to the ordinance of the law. What we find is that what Jesus does is quite simply this. He wants to give them an answer that can be understood without any complication. Note what Jesus does as he answers the Pharisees. He answers the Pharisees by going back to the beginning. From the beginning, the two shall become one flesh. So he establishes what's involved in a marriage. It's a man and a woman coming together and becoming one flesh. It is noted that Jesus answers the Pharisees' questions. He answers the question about divorce being permissible for just any cause by a resounding no. Without saying the word no, he gives the clear answer of no because he takes them back to what God ordained in the beginning. And in doing so, he establishes for them what is right in the eyes of God. God, or rather Jesus, calls the witness of marriage, he calls the witness of God before them. And therefore, understanding that it is impossible to break that which God has joined together. So the idea of some flippant reason, some insignificant reason, or some reason of your own bias isn't going to stand if this union is a God-joined union. Jesus said, what God has joined together, let not man separate. That's the answer. That answers all the query before them. What God has joined together, you don't have a right to separate. So whichever school that is going in this direction, or whatever school of thought is going in this direction, back up and understand that what God has joined together, no man is to separate. When we talk about the idea of being joined together, we need to understand that what we're talking about is a yoke that exists between this man and this woman. This yoke is something that tightly binds them together to do the work that God intended a family to be doing. It is important to recognize that as they're being yoked together, they are indeed establishing the two things that God wants us to understand with regard to marriage. There is an obligation of a man and woman to leave father and mother to establish their home. We'll talk about that more in another lesson on marriage, but there is that sense that when one joins themselves as husband and wife, their relationship with their parents must change. It's not so much a matter of location. It's not a matter of whether a husband and wife can live very near in proximity to one of their family members. It's a matter of a clear understanding of a separation of roles that takes place. Once that obligation is understood, then it becomes easier to understand the importance of that yoke that is not to be broken, and therefore not to be taken lightly, and not to be misunderstood. Man is not separated by what God joins together. God is the one who will allow for the separation, and that needs to be understood. When he talks about the word separate there, he is talking about the word to divide, to break that yoke that was joining them together. And what Jesus is doing by making these comments is telling them this is a serious matter not to be taken lightly. Jesus is making an absolute announcement that you cannot divorce for just any reason. It becomes clear to them as it should be to all of us. To this point, he has not taken into account the matter of adultery, which was according to the law of Moses. He's not dealing with that at all. Because the adultery that is dealing with the law of Moses has within it certain obligations and rights and demands of the law that are separate from what the Pharisees, the Jews, are presenting to Jesus at this time. Now the Jews have a reply. Why then did Moses command to give her a certificate of divorce and to send her away? This particular point, interestingly enough, has become an argument for divorce and remarriage today for any reason. There are actually men who call themselves gospel preachers, as we would define gospel preachers, who would maintain that what they were arguing over was whether or not it's done properly, both religiously and legally, to make the separation so that each can go their way and marry whomever they want and be fine. And it all plays around this misunderstanding and abuse of the terminology when it talks about the idea of Moses and the certificate of divorce. They want Jesus to be in conflict here with Moses. They want Jesus to be in conflict with God. They're thinking that if Moses commanded to give her a certificate of divorce, then they would be able to place Jesus against Moses. And that so they present their question in this very loaded fashion. But the mistake that they made was this. Moses permitted. Moses did not command. The people had disobeyed what God wanted and had become so wrapped up in it that God allowed Moses to give a permission but not a command. And it was because of Israel's hardness of heart. It was because of sin within their camp, and Moses simply permitted it. He regulated the practice. It is one of those issues that is strange to us. When God dealt so absolute and harsh with people about various matters, even to the point of death, in this particular matter of the hardness of their hearts, rather than putting all to death for their adulteries in the separations that were taking place, he allowed Moses to permit it and to regulate it. And that's what was going on. Moses never commanded divorce. He never commanded a giving of a bill of divorcement. If he had, it would have been a contradiction of the law of God from the beginning. Don't know if you've ever thought about that before in all of that reading. Moses permitted, they came at it, Moses commanded. Moses never commanded divorcing or giving the right of divorce. Jesus comes back and says, whoever divorces his wife and marries another woman commits adultery. The general law is presented here with one exception, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. He makes the laws, and he has the authority to present the exception. Whoever divorces his wife and marries another woman commits adultery. And as we've talked in the past, when we talked about divorce over a 3-week period, remember that the idea of committing is the idea of a continual act. And so when one marries another who has been put away without the exception rule, then they're going to be in a continual act of adultery. The exception. Except for immorality. Except for immorality. The one and only exception of God's general law in divorce that Jesus gives is except for immorality. Under the law of Moses, the adulterer would be stoned to death. For reasons that were the Jews' fault, as the law was now being applied, Jesus introduces the matter of the immorality. And how you deal with the immorality is going to play a part in the society that you're in. And that was the problem for the Jews at that time, as the Romans were in charge. Except for immorality. By this, I think we can understand that this exception allows for one to divorce their wife or husband because of the partner's sexual immorality and be free to marry another. This is the exception clause. If your spouse is sexually immoral, you may divorce them and not be committing adultery if you remarry. Now, notice what's on the screen and understand this. We are implying from what Jesus has said the exception clause that would then make one free to marry again. Jesus does not actually say you may divorce your spouse because of their sexual immorality, and now you are free to go and marry another. He never says it. He never addresses it. But what he does give us is this clause that we can reasonably understand from within the text that would tell us that that innocent party is now free to once again engage in a marriage. Sometimes we forget that. Sometimes we get caught up in whether or not the Scriptures even allow for remarriage. Or we're so caught up in what kind of remarriage takes place. As we've talked in the past, the only thing that really matters is whether or not it is a God-joined union. And according to Matthew, the 19th chapter, a God-joined union takes place when a man and a woman come together as husband and wife. They leave their family behind and they cleave to one another. They do so having never had a spouse or are a widow or widower, or their spouse had been committing adultery and the exception clause comes into play. I think that's what Jesus is teaching about the matter of divorce and remarriage. And I'm not going to drag the sermon out longer and longer. You've had my thoughts on it. You're more than happy to discuss it with me at a time that would be convenient. But these are the things that I think are being taught here in the book of Matthew in the 19th chapter. It's good for us to remind ourselves from time to time of what the Word says. It's good for us to remember who has the authority to marry. It's good for us to remember that society doesn't decide it. God's Word has decided it. And we must follow it and live by it. Thank you for your attention on this matter. It's also important for us to remember that way before the divorce and remarriage question arises, there is the question of the death of Christ on the cross. What are we going to do with that? Why did He die on the cross? Why did He go through that suffering? He went through that suffering because the people in the past committed sin. The people in the future were going to commit sin. That brings it to you and I. We've committed sin. And we have no other recourse but to come to Christ. His blood was shed that we can be free from the sins that we've committed. His blood was shed that we can have the hope of eternal life. Have you taken advantage of the blood of Christ? I've known of people and baptized people that were wicked, wicked people. I've studied with a man who shot a man 9 times because of the other man's girlfriend. He murdered him. The law gave him a light sentence because they said because he'd emptied his clip into him instead of just one shot, he was blinded by rage and his emotions got in the way. I'm not giving anybody here a clue for justifying. He went to prison. And in prison, he heard the truth. And he died with Christ and had his sins washed away. That's kind of an extreme case. But we have young people in our audience that are reaching the age of accountability that need to realize you don't have to go murder somebody to need the blood of Christ. If you've come to an age that recognizes that you are walking with Satan, you need the blood of Christ. This is an opportunity. This is an opportunity in the presence of those who love the lost and want to see them die with Christ and rise to walk in newness of life. If you have a need to respond to the invitation, we invite you to have a seat at the front as we stand together and as we sing.